By 2026, a new kind of power plant, one you can't see, is projected to have a capacity of up to 70 gigawatts and generate over $5 billion in annual revenue. This isn't science fiction. It's a strategic shift in our energy grid that's happening right now. The question is, are Western companies positioned to lead, or will they be left playing catch-up? Welcome to Troy Technical Intelligence, your weekly briefing on the technology developments shaping global strategy. I'm Susie.
And I'm Troy.
This week, it's all about the fierce global competition in energy storage. We're seeing a massive push for alternatives to lithium-ion, a regulatory tsunami in battery recycling, and a revolution in how batteries are made. The central theme? Securing the supply chains of the future. We'll start with the technology that's rapidly moving from the lab to the production line, sodium-ion. Troy, there's a lot of noise about sodium-ion batteries this week, both in the U.S. and China. Let's start in the U.S., where the new American Battery Leadership Coalition launched on June 18th. What's their goal?
Their goal is to designate sodium-ion batteries as a U.S. national priority. The coalition, led by firms like Alsym Energy and Peak Energy, argues that sodium is abundant domestically, which eliminates the supply chain risks of lithium, cobalt, and nickel. They're pointing to over 50 gigawatt-hour of planned sodium-ion procurements by U.S. entities as proof of market readiness.
So, a strategic push to build a domestic industry. But how does that stack up against what's happening in China? We're seeing approvals for absolutely massive projects.
It's a stark contrast in scale. This week, China approved Caobei's 110 gigawatt-hour energy storage project. To be clear, that's 50 gigawatt-hour of battery production and 60 gigawatt-hour of systems annually. Simultaneously, Nanyuan Technology broke ground on a 10 gigawatt-hour sodium-ion plant in Ningxia, which includes capacity for 60,000 tons of cathode materials and 30,000 tons of hard carbon anode materials.
And Chinese automakers are moving in. Chery just started production at a new sodium-ion plant. What does this vertical integration mean for Western manufacturers?
It means U.S. and European manufacturers face a competitor that is building an entire self-contained ecosystem at a speed and scale we haven't seen before. While the U.S. is forming coalitions, China is pouring concrete and starting production lines. This creates an imminent risk of Chinese companies setting the global price floor for sodium-ion technology.
So, if you're a Western trading company, is it too early to be sourcing sodium-ion batteries or their components?
Not at all, but you must be strategic. The technology is commercializing now. Look at CATL's new one-shell, two-cells platform, which they plan to roll out in late 2026. They're promising a 20-year lifespan or 15,000 charge cycles and a 600-kilometer EV range. Western traders should be identifying non-Chinese suppliers of key materials like hard carbon anodes and exploring partnerships with emerging Western producers to avoid future dependency.
What's the actionable insight here for an executive?
Re-evaluate your 5-year energy storage strategy immediately. If you're in manufacturing, assess how sodium ion could lower costs and stabilize supply for your stationary storage needs. If you're in the EV supply chain, you need a clear roadmap for integrating this technology because your competitors in China already have one. The time to act was yesterday.
Let's pivot to the end of a battery's life, which is increasingly becoming the beginning of a new one. On June 14th, the G7 and Europe effectively reclassified battery recycling as a strategic resource. What are the new rules?
This is a major policy shift. The EU's Critical Raw Materials Act is now targeting 25% of its annual demand for strategic materials to come from recycling by 2030. More specifically, the EU battery regulation mandates that by 2030, new EV batteries must contain 16% recycled cobalt, 6% recycled lithium, and 6% recycled nickel. The G7 60% rule reinforces this, aiming for 20% of critical mineral consumption from recycling by 2035.
That sounds like a huge opportunity for recycling companies, but also a huge challenge for manufacturers who now have to source these materials.
Exactly. It creates a guaranteed market for recycled content. For U.S. and European manufacturers, this is both a compliance hurdle and a strategic opportunity. You now have a powerful incentive to design products for easier disassembly and to invest in or partner with recyclers. This is about creating a secure, local source of critical minerals to buffer against geopolitical shocks.
We're seeing new technology to meet this demand.
American Battery Technology Company, or ABTC, announced a breakthrough. What did they do?
They've developed a process to extract lithium much earlier from the black mass, the shredded powder from used batteries. Crucially, their method can recover lithium that's bound in the copper and aluminum foils, which is typically lost in conventional recycling. This could dramatically improve the economics of recycling.
And this is a global trend. In India, NAN GreenMet is partnering with Belgium's Silox to build a 40,000-ton-per-year recycling plant. What should Western trading companies take away from this?
They should view recycling materials, especially high-purity black mass, as a new commodity class. There will be a booming market for sourcing, trading, and verifying the quality of these materials. Securing offtake agreements with new large-scale facilities like the one in India could provide a competitive advantage as the EU mandates kick in.
But it's not without risk. Ascend Elements' recycling plant in Kentucky was just sold in a Chapter 11 auction for only $31.7 million after construction was halted. So what's the actionable insight?
The insight is that scaling this infrastructure is capital-intensive and fraught with risk. Executives should immediately begin mapping their supply chains to the new EU regulations. Start dialogues with recyclers like ABTC, who have novel tech. For investors and trading firms, the Ascend Elements case is a warning. Perform deep due diligence on the technology and financial viability of recycling partners. Don't just chase capacity announcements.
With all these new batteries coming online, storing them safely at grid scale is becoming a major concern. We've seen a flurry of new safety regulations in the UK and New York this week. What's the big change?
The big change is a move from reactive to proactive safety design, with a focus on firefighter safety. In the UK, new guidance for best projects over 1 megawatt mandates deeper engagement with fire services on things like compartmentation and escape routes. New York has gone a step further, removing fire code exemptions for utility-owned projects and mandating central monitoring of fire detection systems.
And New York is telling firefighters to take a defensive stance. What does that mean?
It means they are being trained not to enter a burning BESS container. Instead, they should cool the exterior to prevent thermal runaway propagation to adjacent units. This is a direct acknowledgement of the unique risks of BESS fires, like toxic gas release and explosion. It shifts the entire safety burden onto the system's design.
So for a US or European manufacturer installing a BESS, what does this mean practically?
It means your system design, from the cell level up, must now incorporate advanced fire suppression and containment. The 2026 Guide for 1,500-volt BESS systems explicitly details requirements from NFPA 855, covering everything from ventilation rates to explosion protection. You can no longer treat the fire suppression system as an add-on. It is an integral part of the BESS.
We saw an example of this innovation from Aquasphere in the UK with their fire water containment system.
Yes, their solution for the 400-megawatt Hams Hall facility is a perfect example of this new focus. They designed a pollution containment tank system that not only captures contaminated water from firefighting, but does so with a 30% smaller footprint. This technology directly addresses the environmental and regulatory compliance risks of a BESS fire.
So what should a trading company or a distributor of energy storage systems know?
They need to understand that the value proposition is shifting. It's no longer just about cost per kilowatt hour. It's about safety, compliance, and insurability. Distributors should be sourcing systems that meet these new stringent codes in the UK and New York, as they will likely become the global standard. Offering integrated safety and containment solutions like Aquasphere's will be a key differentiator.
And the actionable insight for executives?
If you are procuring, installing, or insuring a BESS, you must make fire safety a primary, non-negotiable item in your technical specifications. Engage with the local fire authorities at the planning stage, not as an afterthought. Your checklist must now include thermal runaway propagation barriers, advanced gas detection, and a plan for contaminated fire water. This is now a critical operational and financial risk.
Let's go deeper into the battery itself. Two major manufacturing trends are accelerating, getting rid of toxic solvents and boosting performance with silicon. First, the move to dry electrode manufacturing. Why is this such a big deal?
It's a potential paradigm shift in battery production. Conventional manufacturing involves mixing electrode materials into a toxic solvent slurry, coating it onto foil, and then using massive, energy-intensive ovens to dry it. This drying process can account for up to 40% of the manufacturing cost.
And several companies are making breakthroughs. Imperial College London, Dragonfly Energy in the US, and LightCap Technologies have all advanced their solvent-free processes.
That's right. Imperial College's B-Solve team won an award for their process. Dragonfly just secured a European patent for its dry powder coating technology, and LightCap Technologies received an $11.3 million grant from the California Energy Commission to scale up its activated dry electrode platform. They're all aiming for the same thing: cheaper, faster, and greener battery manufacturing.
How does this specifically affect US and European manufacturers trying to compete with Asia?
This is their strategic opening. By eliminating the need for massive drying ovens and solvent recovery systems, dry processing allows for smaller factory footprints and lower capital expenditure. This could enable Western companies to build competitive gigafactories more quickly and cost-effectively, leveling the playing field with established Asian giants.
At the same time, we're seeing major advances in anode materials, specifically with silicon. What's the promise there?
The promise is a significant boost in energy density. Silicon can theoretically hold 10 times more lithium ions than the graphite used in today's anodes. This translates directly to longer EV range and faster charging. Companies like Amprius and Silo Nanotechnologies are leading the charge. Silo, for example, has deals with Mercedes-Benz and Panasonic and aims for a 20...
It's a critical move. As a U.S. innovator, Silla has invested hundreds of millions in its Moses Lake, Washington production facility. This legal action at the International Trade Commission is a clear signal that Western firms will defend their IP to protect domestic manufacturing investments.
For trading companies, what's the takeaway on these new materials and processes?
The supply chain is about to bifurcate. You'll have the traditional graphite anode and wet-coated electrode supply chain, and an emerging one for silicon-based anodes and dry processing equipment. Traders should start building relationships with these new players, like Silla, Group 14, and LeCap. The materials are different, and the quality control requirements are more stringent.
What's the final actionable insight for executives this week?
It's twofold. First, instruct your R&D and manufacturing teams to evaluate the immediate integration potential of dry electrode technology. The cost savings and environmental benefits are too significant to ignore. Second, if you're in the EV sector, silicon anodes are the most important near-term technology before solid-state matures. Your battery procurement strategy must reflect this. Partner now with suppliers who have proven scalable silicon anode technology.
A lot to process this week, Troy. Let's boil it down. What are the three key takeaways for Western executives?
First, the sodium ion era has begun, and China is aiming for global dominance through sheer scale. U.S. and European companies cannot afford to wait. They must accelerate domestic production and secure non-Chinese material supply chains now, or risk being priced out of the market for mass market energy storage within 3 years.
Second,
battery recycling is no longer an environmental, social, and governance initiative. It is a strategic imperative mandated by law in Europe. The new regulations are creating a massive, predictable demand for recycled critical minerals. This is a call to action to invest in recycling technology and partnerships to build secure, circular supply chains.
And finally?
Third, the next wave of manufacturing efficiency and battery performance is here and is defined by two words, dry and silicon. Dry electrode processing will slash manufacturing costs, while silicon anodes will boost EV performance. Companies that fail to integrate these technologies into their roadmaps will be selling last-generation products by 2028.
A clear and urgent message. That's all the time we have for this week's briefing. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
We'll be back next week with more analysis of the technology developments that matter to your business. Be sure to subscribe to Troy Technical Intelligence wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss a briefing.